All right, we're live. Trying to look
All
like I'm
right.
in the TV on our logo, but
I like that.
Kind of cuts off my ears.
Well, it's tough with the headsets. I don't need the backgrounds. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it is. Yeah, it's like when you have a.
I need a green screen.
Yeah, me too. When I do the water one, the Miami scene, it's like, you know, my head's constantly going in and out of it.
Yeah,
and it's just kind of annoying, but you know, and I don't like the headsets either because it seems to exacerbate that effect. But look, you know, I mean, markets are looking good, man. I'm telling you,
I haven't even looked at the markets today.
Oh. Well, BTC has been floating around 17. You know, it's at 16,967. It looks like it's been going up and over. But, you know, all the equities are up.
13 right now.
I'm sorry?
17,000. Oh, no. Now back under 16.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at the Binance. Oh, no. I'm looking at the BTC.
I'm going to change up. I don't like this background. I don't like the way it cuts off my head.
But look, I think what's happened on top of everything else that looks to be have been going good is, you know, that Xi Biden meeting at the G20 summit. And the fact that the next day after the meeting, the, you know, chief Chinese, what do we call it? I don't want to say propaganda, but chief Chinese government newspaper, let's say, came out with the headline story was this picture of, you know, Biden and Xi shaking hands in between the two flags and everything. So, you know, they shifted state messaging, obviously, to, you know, okay, but we're not going to be able to win the demonize them and then deal with the Russian mess at the same time. It's that, you know, we got to take the doom and gloom off and, you know, start like a rapprochement between everyone.
Right. So evidently,
from what I've heard, they had a really good 3.5 hour discussion.
Wow. You know,
which was about, you know, look.
I heard something like they were told to the military was told to prepare for war. I was like, what the fuck is that? I didn't see any report of that, but I saw like several.
That was maybe before. I didn't see any of that. But maybe there's, either. You know, something, somebody saying it. I don't know. But look, the thing is, it takes it down a notch. And so, look, coming out of the COVID lockdowns, China.
Yep.
You know, a lot of speculation in another channel I'm in about, you know, something we don't talk a lot about, which is that, you know, China has a strategic petroleum reserve, too. And they're really talking about a bunch of SPR releases next year in China, you know, because they're really dependent upon, you know, imported oil. So COVID lockdowns ending, hopefully there, opening up the economy and then, you know, some energy price support to, you know, keep the price of oil down. And I think the markets are reacting very favorably across the board. I saw China really rallied last night. And, you know, Hang Seng up 723, Shenzhen 237. So, you know, 2%, Hang Seng was 4%. I mean, that's a big move. So U.S. equities are popping. Europe, you know, it's up. I mean, we got to keep the FTSE or keep the UK out of that European stuff. I think the one to watch there right now is DAX and the, you know, the German and the French ones. But, you know, I feel like it looks good. And then all the interest rate stuff seems to be heading toward that soft landing. You know, talk about what does this Ukraine-Russia ending look like? You know, I guess if I'm Lukashenko, I'm feeling the Belarus dude. I'm feeling a little nervous. Like I might be the sacrificial lamb.
That would be good.
But, you know, it's like I feel like there's some in surviving the midterm elections, basically, where it turned out to be kind of a non-event.
My apologies to our Republican listeners, but I tweeted yesterday that I'm willing to watch Fox News for the next 24 hours just in case I could get to see what's the word?
Oh, Carrie Lake cry.
I want to see Carrie Lake cry.
Well, I think that the market, the people, whatever, I think it kind of signaled that, you know, just tired of all the friggin'.
Well, look, I mean, Biden
back
made
and forth
the exact right strategic move to go and make it a referendum on democracy. And then somebody made the point the other day. I don't remember where I was. Oh, it was in the Atlantic, I think. Anyway, they made the point that there's a tie-in you know, there was a candidate, a woman who ran in a Republican district in Washington state for Congress. And she's a small business owner, owns an automotive shop with her husband. Her family's all lumber loggers, you know, and her, like her slogan was protecting your freedom. But she would always annotate protecting your freedom with gun rights, pro-choice,
individual rights,
protecting individual rights. Right. And she just hammered that and she won. She wasn't supposed to win. And she won. And I think that's a winning message. Anyway, let's not get stuck.
Well, no, but you're right. You're right. Look, I think everybody's starting to see through all the clutter. Yeah. And they're starting to see, look, these labels don't really mean anything. You know, it's like, what is important to me? What I find interesting is that when you put all of, you know, some of these arguments we've been having for a long time, and put them in a different context, you know, like individual rights, you know, women's rights, then it's not about it, it fits all the other arguments, you know, all the other frameworks, libertarian, you know, individual rights, decentralization, democracy, all of it, you know, allowing, you know, self-actualization through free will. And all of a sudden everybody realized, wait, that's what we're really all about. We're not about really telling everybody what to do, because God knows you. I mean, how long did it take just to get people to wear seatbelts and, you know, drive sober?
Yeah.
Like, God damn it, it's my American right to drink and drive. You know, it's like, I mean, let's go back 30, 40 years. I'm not talking about today. But, you know, the point is that anybody wants to tell us
the ability. Go cups at
the bar. I'm sorry, what?
I said to-go cups at the bar.
Yeah, exactly. Drive-through. Yeah. You know, I remember drive-through stuff where you get, you know, full frozen margaritas with salt on the rim driving through. You know?
When I was in high school in Texas and Oklahoma, the only person that wasn't allowed to be drinking in the vehicle was the car. Everybody else could have booze.
Except the car.
Except the driver.
The driver. Okay, got it. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's so everybody else would be drinking. Yeah, we, you know, that's, I was telling my daughter this, you know, when we were kids, and what was Friday night? It was like, you know, four or five dudes in a car, everybody with their own six pack, drinking beer and driving around town.
Exactly.
You know, just looking for shit to do, which the more you drink gets more inane. Like, you know, running over mailboxes and donuts in yards and just stupid stuff. But because you're bored.
Yeah.
So
anyway, to start off the show, I posted this on Twitter, but this just makes me happy. I'm sure everybody's seen it by now, the people that are addicted to TikTok, whatever. But this just made me really reflect and think, you know, as much as I'm not excited about where the U.S. is, I am feeling a little better after the election. But this is a video for those that are just listening. You're just going to hear the odd. I mean, just you're just going to hear the audio in the podcast. But it's a man in a Hispanic man in a UPS outfit that's from Cuba. Oh, it's going to suck on the podcast because it's subtitles. But, you know, for those watching, you'll get to enjoy it. The rest of you can skip ahead.
You can hear the subtitles,
read,
man.
You know, I guess I could read the subtitles to everybody. What he's saying. Anyway.
Can you do it in Spanish for us?
This just brought me joy. It made me feel good about, you know, freedom. Speaking of freedom.
Está grabando, ¿no? Yeah. Grábame. Okay. Grábame. Grábame. Me lo voy a sacar del bolsillo.
Oh, my God. Mentira.
¿Cuánto gané yo aquí? ¡Sí!
Look at the taxes.
Pero prefiero esto que no Fidel Castro. Fidel Castro me quitaba más. El comunismo me quitaba más. ¿Tú sabes qué? Este es mi primer cheque por hora. Que tú sientes que cada hora de trabajo vale. Que cada hora de trabajo tiene una importancia en tu vida. Y que se lucha, que sabes que puedes luchar por algo. Es un sentimiento que no es comparable con nada. Porque nunca lo tuve en mi país. Y en Cuba no lo hay. Y aquí lo tengo la prueba.
Love that. Makes me tear up.
Yeah, I mean, we often forget just how good we have it. You know, in the sense of that, you know, we throw a bunch of labels and, you know, compete in a bunch of areas, information, sports, you name it, government, politics. But, you know, you look at a lot of these other places, man, they don't even have the ability to do that.
Yeah. For those just listening, it was a Cuban, a recent immigrant from Cuba, probably here in Miami. And I often make fun of some of the attitudes of the Cuban community, but he's newly arrived. He has his first job in the United States. He gets his first paycheck from UPS, and he's talking about, you know, how much it means to him and how important it is to him to be able to have the freedom to go out and work and earn money. And then he talks about the taxes and how, you know, there would be nothing left from Fidel taking his money. So anyway, just was really touching. It made me stop and remember how good we have it, as much as we complain about shit here. So, anyway.
Well, look, man, if people are willing to die to get here in floatable boats and shit floating from Cuba to the Keys or Miami, you know, or they're, you know, willing to swim across the Rio Grande, or they're willing to sit in a frigging container for 27 days coming from Asia or something like that. Honestly, those are the kind of go-getters I want.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
I don't want people who sit around complaining and whining and bitching about everything.
Exactly.
Or that are spoiled. I want people that want to do stuff. And, yep. You know, I look at stuff like that and it makes me think, you know, about just how can I be more productive?
Yeah.
Or how can I give more? Because you just forget that's the brand.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we're supposed to be all about.
Sean says the average person in the West is the 1%. We forget how lucky we are.
Yeah,
we really do. And it was a great reminder for me yesterday. It really touched me to see somebody realizing that, showed the kids and said, you know, this is, you're so fortunate.
I had a funny little debate like that, not debate, discussion with my daughter. And she is like, hopefully nobody's listening, which I mean, that's what I'm saying. He was like, your mom was taking her to set up a bank account. And she's like, I'm just worried about this. I'm like, what are you worried about, man? It's a bonding thing. Go with your mom. She's really good at money, with money. And so I said, she's like, no, but I think she's doing this so she can take away my credit card, because she's always talking about my charges. And I'm like, she goes, what are we? Like, am I not allowed to charge dinners and stuff like that? And I'm like, yeah, of course you can. What are you talking about? And she's like, well, are we poor? What do we do? You know? And I'm like, I don't know what's going on with you and your mom, but you need to fix it, sort it out. Just go get the bank account with her. It's not a big deal. I can put money in it.
Explain to people you're divorced.
Oh, yeah, I am divorced. Yeah. But, you know, I get along with her, ex. So it's not like it's not a bad thing. It's just that, you know, she's from South America, too. And so, you know, a slightly different perspective on some things.
Yeah.
Definitely, you know, the 1%er type out of South America. But, you know, it's just, you know, it's much more old Spain, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And on the girls. And, you know, where I'm more like, this is America, man. She's an American girl. She's not going to respond to that kind of caging up shit. Gotta let her rip, man. Let her run. Make good decisions. You know, that kind of shit. So I'm like, that's my thing. You can't, like, lock them up. You know, she grew up, you know, she grew up in, I'll go say it, Lima, Peru.
Yeah.
And so, you know, her dad was a big time, you know, general, congressman, you know, all of it you could possibly think of. And, you know, they grew up in these houses or hacienda type things where, even in the city, where there was a big courtyard. And, you know, they didn't really leave the courtyard.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't go outside the walls, basically. So, you know, they're super paranoid. And, you know, here, throw that on top of like how we're afraid to let our kids walk down the street. Whereas when we were kids, it was like, I'm going out, Ma, at like 8:30. And she's like, be back by dinner time. You know, and that was it. You know, you're gone.
Yeah.
And
you went running wherever you wanted.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's, I think that world still exists out here. And, you know, I more encourage people to just, you know, try to put some guardrails on it, but you can't control them.
Yeah.
You know, you got to find outlets for them. And so, you know, this is America. And you know, women are going to do what women want to do. And it's not even our fucking business. Okay. So let them do it. Not let them do it. Get out of the fucking way, I guess.
Yeah. So my poll wrapped up. I said, I'm not buying into conspiracies, but here's a question. If SBF had something on Gensler, would you support a testimony deal for Sam? And 44.9% are more want to get Gensler more than they want to get Sam. So they said they'd take the deal for Sam to testify. So, you know, an 18.8% said stupid question, which probably was, but it was fun anyway. So
yeah, it was fun, man. I like that. I mean, obviously there's both of those parties are going to do whatever's in their self-interest.
Of course.
And if one can throw the other under the bus first, you know, they're going to do it. Yeah. I was watching, you know, I saw Ken Griffin of Citadel fame and, you know, on Bloomberg cryptocurrency show, which of course, you know, it's a rogues gallery of TradeFi people getting their ass handed to them in crypto, which is, I kind of find it a little bit funny myself, but, you know, it made me think a couple of things. One, if all these guys were on FTX, they better start, you know, they might want to all Google seed phrase security, because odds are they got that seed phrase laying all over the friggin' place. You might want to get that under control. But what he said was interesting. He goes, look, crypto market is it's a fraction of what it used to be. And I'm kind of like, well, you know, 800 billion versus 3 trillion peak. Is that a fraction? No, I don't think it's really a fraction. It's less. But, you know, he said that now most of it is BTC and ETH. And those are under CFTC regulatory framework. And so he's now he's like, most of the market is under a regulatory framework now. And I said, I hadn't really thought of it like that. But I'm like, that's most of it is. And so, you know, it seems to me that there's a, you know, they're all in it. And they're all, you know, got their hats handed to them a little bit. And now they're trying to figure out what's next. But they're not going anywhere. And I guess that's what I'm trying to get to. So these types of things with Gensler and Sam, I would like to see it turn into a mess of public disclosure, because I really do want to see what's going on there, too.
Yeah, me too. I think everybody does.
And why? You know, and let's get – look, it's already regulated. So this kind of shit, FTX, those platforms, you know, anytime you're going to be hosting stuff on a platform, it has to be insured. It just can't not be insured. And I think that – you know, there's that and then there's us. And what I mean by that is, I mean, you know, again, I'm not shilling anything, but people that aspire to be decentralized, you know, like I look at your guys at Canto, you know, I look at, you know, my guys at Geist, you know, people that are trying to do really decentralized stuff and it's holding up in this market, which I find interesting.
It is.
So look for that. You know, Monad, you brought to us last Friday, I believe, which we still haven't had a chance to dig into. But Monad's got big people behind it, and it is doing some decentralized stuff. Look, the decentralized stuff like Zero VIX, I'm not going to call it decentralized, I'm sorry. But the if you're going to do like a bank model, you know, bank model has been take in user deposits, pay them 3% interest, lend it out at 6% interest with a multiplier of like 11 to 1. You make the money on the spread between 6 and 3. That's the bank model. You can do that perfectly in crypto if that's all you do, you know, and it's peer-to-peer and it all matches up. That stuff is all there. It's only when we start mixing in to, you know, where people put stuff on deposit to go get yield. And to me, maybe that type of stuff belongs more on regulated platforms versus –
belongs on regulated platforms?
The kind of the stuff that was going on FTX, you know, the deposit for yield, the Celsius stuff, the FTX stuff, all of that. Maybe in certain quantities or certain ways that maybe that sits over here on the, you know, kind of the boring big stuff. But, you know, maybe there's other ways to still do stuff like that with limits in, you know, these pure decentralized places. But that's what I'm getting at is I'm finding most of the cool stuff is out there on the edge still. So let everybody fight over the last millennium business model, you know, the TradFi bank model, let's say. Yeah. Oh, my God, FTX wasn't a bank? It wasn't insured? Well, who'd I give my seed phrase to? You know, they can play that game all day long. But, you know, let's be over with the other cool stuff and let's keep pushing. And let's keep building.
Jake Travinsky did a – he's one of my – the legal follows that I do in my crypto legal list. He's head of one of the blockchain associations and – he did this great thread kind of outlining what's up and what's next. And then I said, you know, I retweeted and said, I truly believe Gensler wanted FTX to be the NASDAQ of crypto. That's why he was working with Sam to position them how he was hoping to position them, because that's where he wanted to land when you know, this whole thing when he leaves office. So, I mean, that's my own personal opinion, but Jake did really good thread. I'll put it in the show notes. He says, FTX allowed trading of tokenized stocks that were obviously within the SEC's jurisdiction if offered to the retail U.S. retail market. But what was the SEC doing? Prosecuting Library, doing media hits on Kim Kardashian and harassing upstanding U.S. firms with pointless investigations. All the while, the SEC was apparently in secret talks with FTX to grant them exemptive relief and give them a regulatory advantage over U.S. firms. That's backwards. The SEC should be helping U.S. firms compete against offshore rivals, not the other way around. The SEC failed us. FTX also allowed trading of derivatives subject to CFTC jurisdiction. It was first and foremost a derivatives exchange. When BitMEX did that, the CFTC prosecuted them for operating an unregistered futures commission merchant. FTX was the same. But what was the CFTC doing? The CFTC was busy working on FTX's proposal to offer derivatives to U.S. retail participants. They published the proposal for public comment this March. Meanwhile, it was prosecuting U.S. firms for minor violations and filing a flawed lawsuit against a DAO. The CFTC failed us. There's still so much we don't know about FTX. The investigations will be and should be extensive and unrelenting. But in addition to investigating FTX, we need to know how U.S. regulators got this so wrong. Until them, none of them deserve more authority to regulate crypto. And he has to talk to these people all the time. I mean, he's part of a legal, you know, entity that's lobbying and fighting regulators and, you know, the whole bit.
I mean, he's right on a lot of, you know, I don't want to say what he's not right on or right, but it's on most of it, if not all of it. But when a company is playing the game and they're on the Hill slinging cash around to all the people on the committees that write the legislation.
Yep.
And then they're backing, you know, other political powerhouses, maybe PACs or think tanks. It's kind of hard for regulators to go after them as the first target.
Yep.
And I don't want to say that they're protected, but they have influence.
They at least get the first. They at least get the first round of protection.
And they get the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, because exactly. Everybody's like, "Oh no, it's a good guy, man.
Yeah,
I got a bunch of money with him. It's cool, you know.
Yeah,
that kind of thing." And everybody's like, "Yeah, but," and he's like, "Yeah, no, take it down these guys first. Come back to this later. They're going to get their shit straight." And, you know, they don't. I mean, this is what, you know, others that I've known have done, you know, as you get on a circuit and you're going to all these dinners all the time and all these breakfasts. But, you know, when you show up to the breakfast meeting, you're also writing a check for $1,000 or something. And right. That's how it gets you in there, you know. So then if anything pops up that, hey, there might be trouble at, let's say, FTX, your first inclination is, no, that guy's a good guy or that gal's a good gal. It can't be them. That can't be right.
Right.
And so business as usual. And they show up at the next one and it's nothing. Here's $1,000. Okay, cool. Come on in. You know, it's not, that's the way DC works.
Yep.
So I could see how he would get the free pass on a lot of stuff.
Oh, I forgot. Chuck said earlier, yeah, this is how it was when I was in high school. In Texas in 1987, anyone could have an open container as long as the driver was not intoxicated. The good news out of all of this is shit that needed to get done previously and hadn't gotten done is getting done, right? So Binance is going to implement Vitalik Buterin's proof of reserves protocol that he wrote up. So they're going to be the ones to test it out, to show and prove the reserves that they have on chain. And, you know, look, if out of all of this nastiness, you know, we start seeing more people into DeFi, more people self-custody, and more exchanges proving that they have the reserves, you know, it's a great thing. It's the silver lining, I guess.
Well, also, look, man, I hadn't seen this super clear pathway now for, you know, something you have said a couple of times, but, you know, Binance becoming a bank.
Oh,
yeah. A real bank. I mean, yeah. I mean, just go through the process now because you got all the juice, all the leverage. If you like step into the void now where SBF was and you start picking up the mantle of the cash funnel, then you will get your license eventually. It's going to take a while. I mean, maybe another jurisdiction, maybe you buy one, but this is a really, you know, they got the scale to really do this now and fit in. You know, because they have been making inroads to, you know, I mean, I don't want to. How do I say this the right way? Keeping Americans off of the platform, let's say.
Yeah.
Or, you know, KYCing people. I guess they're KYCing everybody now, right?
Well, yeah, voters. They're KYCing and keeping Americans off.
No, but I mean, because they used to not KYC anybody back 5-6 years
well,
ago.
Yeah, there was like a minimum up to like two or three Bitcoin a day or something like that. Yeah.
Which when it was 3,000 was no big deal, but when it's 16,000, it's like people are moving on or 25,000 a day on non-KYC accounts. But yeah, that was a problem. Seems like it's cleaned up now. So
Sean says CZ is dancing around the issue. The credible exchanges have done Merkle tree, proof of reserves, and proof of liability. CZ plays test with one side of the equation. Who, Sean, could you let me know what exchanges have it? I'd definitely love to take a look at that.
I thought Kraken put something out. I couldn't tell if people were making fun of him or not, though.
Yeah, I don't know. Sean does not like CZ, but
yeah, and crypto.com put something out, and that's when they brought up the whole issue of all the shiv they're holding.
Yeah.
Hey, did now, it come out of Justin Sun and his deal with FTX? Did
he I think they were still trying to do that with, but I assume with the bankruptcy filing, that's all.
Freezes it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably not happening. DeFi Llama, of course, published a new dashboard, centralized exchange transparency dashboard, to show eventually liabilities. They'll have links to the wallets, the whole bit. Right now, I think they just have current TVL. And so they have current TVL versus clean TVL. Clean TVL is deducting BNB, but deducting exchange tokens. So BNB for Binance, FTT for FTX, etc. So anyway, sizable TVL for Binance compared to number two, crypto.com. OKX at 5.8 billion, but you know, there's a lot of data to be filled in. Yeah, down here on Coinbase and Kraken, they don't have the numbers. So Sean just said Kraken and BitMEX have proof of reserves, Merkle tree. So assuming that DeFi Llama will add the Kraken data eventually here to show it, but they do show their auditors, they show the most recent date. Of audit, which is good.
Who are give me the name of some of the auditing firms. I'm just curious.
Deloitte.
Okay.
Right, I think Amanino was FTX's, one of FTX's. FTX had two. So they're going to probably be under a little scrutiny. I have a feeling they won't be getting any more new gigs.
Yeah, as much as I hate to say it, you know, the groups you want on these types of gigs, this is what I used in Asia all the time. I use KPMG a lot, and I use Ernst & Young. Mm. Now, I know big consulting firms, yeah, we know the issues there.
Yeah.
But if you want to get on the inside track where the big boys are playing, that's who you put in there, because that's a CYA cover your ass play. Because then anybody that invests in you or does anything with you, there could be like, hey, man, E&Y, you know, any company, KPMG, E&Y, Deloitte, they're the auditors. Who else was, you know, who's better than that? You know, how, if they were there, I should think nothing's going to go wrong. And the fact of the matter is usually nothing does at that point. I mean,
right.
For the investors. So, you know, you go that route. If you're going to try to be the crypto.com, FTX, Binance, those types, I would highly recommend that, because one, you get armies of these drone MBAs that just want to do all the administrative and operational stuff. They don't want to do the vision stuff or get involved with what you're doing. But at least you know the data coming out, and remember, data is a plural word, is, you know, about as good as it gets. So you can act on that data. And so when you're out talking to people, you're acting off of data generated by them. So when you start connecting dots and selling, you don't get yourself in trouble as far as representing things. So
yeah.
And the regulators, the law firms, anytime you get in a dust up with anybody, the very first thing those lawyers look at is, who is your law firm?
Yep.
And if they see nobody, they're like, oh, this is going to be a shit show. But if they see like a top five global law firm in there, they're like, oh, okay, these guys got it going on. There's nothing too bad here.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
But it's institutional grade stuff. So look at those firms. If you want to be an exchange and take deposits, investor money, it's not fun, but it lets you not have to worry so much about ending up in the, what are they, 3x5 cells these days?
I don't know.
No.
Shizzy says, Kevin O'Leary was on Crypto Banter today and basically said the FTX crash got the regulators motivated to finally get something done soon. Well, we'll see what that looks like. I don't have any faith in them doing it right. Chuck says the Merkle tree magic has been a panacea all over the ETH universe. It by itself is not a trust mechanism. It's about rolling up child transactions into a parent, not validating them. So Chuck calling bullshit. And Sean said, and proof of liability is needed as well.
So they're only showing one side of the ledger.
Of course.
They're not showing the assets.
I mean, they'll publish what their liabilities are, but I don't think there's any way for them to do that on chain unless the liabilities are on chain loans, right? You know, if you've borrowed money against collateral on a lending protocol, yeah, then you can put that.
We should be able to see a balance sheet.
But if you borrowed money from Wells Fargo, not so much.
Well, see, that's what I think is that we should be able to see the whole balance sheet. Because that's the only way you can
keep
tell
it up to date.
If these are financially solvent or not.
And look, here's the thing that the message that sends to the rest of the financial community, right? If all the major exchanges update they got one guy whose job every day is to fucking update that fucking balance sheet and make sure that it gets updated and posted on chain, on a website, whatever. And then the proof of reserves is on chain and can be seen, and you can look at the wallets and see what's there. Then definitely think I think that makes a ton of sense. So and I think it sends a message that we're taking the extra step that you guys would never take, right? Or you wouldn't take except every 3 months when you have to do a call.
Yeah.
Sean said, check out the BitMEX method, the gold standard for reserves and liabilities on their blog. I will do that, Sean. Thank you very much. We will talk about that.
Yeah, because I mean, shouldn't these also get some level of like, I mean, I don't know who does it, but you know, think about stress testing and things like that. Yeah. I mean, that's the stuff Europeans do all the time. Americans do it all the time. Brits do it all the time. I mean, it's something that, you know, tries to find these kind of holes in oversight. And so anything like that makes this stuff more, and again, this is this stuff. Okay. This is centralized stuff. This is not the stuff that, you know, we really like to dabble in, but this is the stuff that people that aren't comfortable with setting up a friggin' wallet go for. Yeah. So if it's more people in, we don't want them getting ripped off either.
Absolutely.
Even if they are making every mistake in the book, because it's only going to hurt us. But, you know, this is where this is. I was kind of thinking a lot about this yesterday, how, you know, when you kind of look at, you know, when Bitcoin came out and the sort of Bitcoin ethos, which then kind of morphed into the crypto ethos, but how it just kind of kept going, but it stayed its own thing. And, you know, it is the decentralized one. It is the one that's there. But then all these other things came along that became more centralized type plays of that original decentralization.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, regulators have trouble understanding what things are. But I think if we go back to that original ethos and all the stuff the Bitcoin ethos and all the stuff we're working on in DeFi, I think that might help us find what we're trying to create here.
Yeah.
But to each his own.
I haven't had time to climb into the how and the why of this, but this is BitMEX's most recent snapshot of their Bitcoin proof of reserves and proof of liabilities. So we'll take a deeper look at this, but you know, appreciate you pointing it out, Sean. And yeah. one of our listeners and one of my followers on Twitter who calls himself Q not Anon, QHSNYJ on Twitter is actually helping to write this and another proof of reserves document for the Bitcoin Policy Institute. He sent me a direct message earlier today that this was up. New versions of this are coming. And then there's another report coming out from the same pair of guys. They're doing a companion piece to address other areas of concern to this. So, you know, look, Bitcoin communities over there doing the work. So that's great to see. And hopefully you would think that if BitMEX is the gold standard, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can just use what they use. Now, maybe just Bitcoin. So maybe there are other complications or issues relative to other chains. But anyway, good to see.
You know what I'm looking at real quick, Brad?
Yep.
If I'm looking at the top gainer coins today, the top two, without looking, what do you think they are?
Solana and FTT.
FTT, yes, but Serum on
Serum on Solana. Yeah, because I saw that there was they were working through some solution. Serum, I believe, froze any more activity in their lending mechanisms, something. I just glanced past a Twitter.
Yeah. And then, of course, today. FTT is doing a little lunk right now. But I don't know. You know, at $1.98, I mean, maybe on a dollar, and then you ride it to. But it's like trading anything, like trading Doge or trading SHIB or any of that other shit.
Wait for the community that says, we're going to take it over. Sam Bankman's like, finger on the dump button. Go ahead, guys.
Yeah, well, you know, and for I don't think he's going to be dumping anything. I think it's a counter frozen. But yeah, kidding. But no, you're right. It's not one to bet the turnaround. It's not one to bet the long term with. But sometimes in these, you get all the people thinking. Scalps. Huh?
You want to play the scalps on the idiots buying it? Go for it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the play. I mean, that's what happens at all the new
chains. Don't play with anything substantial.
No. But you play it just like you understand the 20% yields are, you know, VC money.
Yeah.
It's not like they're actually going out and earning 20% anywhere to pay you because there's nowhere to do that. So, you know, go in with an open eye, knowing what's going on. But, you know, look at anything at the top of the leaderboard. Every single day you're going to see stuff like that.
Yep. So New York Times came out with a piece from an interview with Sam yesterday, and the community is not pleased. It's being called a puff piece. New York Times was paid off, blah, 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 blah. I thought it made Sam look like a total fucking idiot. So
I think he's already done that pretty well, hasn't he?
Yeah, but this made it even worse. This was to me even worse. But you know, we've got all these conspiracy theories running fucking rampant to Gensler was paid off, to Sam was, you know, paid off the New York Times, to, you know, it was a plot at the tops of the federal government to do a psyop to take out crypto by creating this exchange, and that Sam's parents set him up to crash and burn so it could take down crypto, and just all this bullshit. And it's just like, come on, people, seriously, it's fucking Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is what happened. And if you've ever worked with a group of human beings in any capacity, corporate, government, I don't give a shit, people don't keep secrets. People don't coordinate well. And if you think that hundreds of people in the federal government are coordinating all these conspiracy theories, then you're just not living in reality. Because it's not just not possible. Just
people
not possible.
Talk. People Humans talk.
Are idiots.
Yeah. Number
one, they can't competently coordinate like that. Number two, people talk. Yeah, it's just stupid. Anyway, this piece was a little softer than I probably would have expected, but I happen to have a relationship with the reporter. So I'm working really hard to get him on the show Friday. He's going up the chain to the powers that be to see if he's permitted to come on and talk to us about this article. So we'll see what happens.
Well, make sure you send the clips of Deliverance and a few other ones. That should get the whole editorial board on top of this one.
Sean said, the story is simply DGen gambled customer funds away and covered it with his own shitcoin. And of course, then he has to make another dig at CZ, the Binance model, except that we have zero evidence of Binance borrowing against his own token. So completely different.
Yeah, but that kind of stuff never shows up until the price crashes. You never see that until the price crashes. So
Shizzy said, so the conspiracy about the FTX office orgies, we're not true. Oh, no, that's not a conspiracy. That may be true. And frankly, I wouldn't shock me at all. But that doesn't require any coordination.
Look, you know, all the other stories, like the meth stories I'm hearing, you know, it's like, it was just a shit show. But again, it comes back to like, who was watching the kids, basically? You know, if you're giving somebody $600 million, I mean, dude, I'm going to be in your friggin' office 24/7 making sure that you're not fucking me over. And that's why I can't believe nobody's in there watching these guys or checking on them and showing up impromptu. I mean, I would be all over that stuff because you can't trust people.
Yeah, did you know he owned 30% of the guy that was the press guy for Trump?
Mooch?
Mooch. He owned 30% of Mooch's fund.
Skybridge.
Skybridge.
Yeah, I heard they were trying to buy it back or something.
Yeah, he's trying to back. He's trying to get it out, trying to buy it back from him.
Yeah, I mean, so what if you're an SBF or you're the bankruptcy court, you're saying, yeah, twice what we put in. That's the price.
That's the price. Sean said, you think so. I think he's saying you think so to me saying that CZ hasn't used it as collateral.
No.
In fairness, Sean, to your argument, I am going on CZ's word of that. And my, you know, right now I have no reason not to trust him about that. But you're right. We don't know for sure. So I would think, though, that if he had, some folks in the industry probably would say, red alert, Binance is in trouble. They've collateralized all their BNB. But who knows? You know, I'm willing to call him out if he does stupid shit and endangers people's funds. But I think he's smarter than that, frankly.
Well, look, if everybody...
And he also doesn't own a market-making hedge fund that is the sole market maker on his exchange.
You know, Brad, this is when we were talking months ago, and I was like, oh, real VC or crypto VC? And you're like, oh, no, these are like crypto VC. And it was like Alameda and all these people. And I'm like, yeah, but they're not... They haven't ridden a down cycle. They're not really real VCs because this is all kind of play money right now in a lot of ways. I mean, it's real money. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, when you got a big stack of winnings in front of you, you know, like when you're at the casino, it's 3:30 in the morning at the craps table. You're up a shitload. You know, what are you doing? You're tipping the cocktail waitresses $100 chips and stuff. You're just like throwing the money everywhere because it's not real.
Right.
But when you like lose half of that stack, all of a sudden you're like, oh fuck, I gotta sober up here and get the hell out of here. Or, you know, if you get beaten down on a VC investment, you learn lessons. They never had those.
Yeah.
And so now they're getting them all at once. And then you look at everybody's like, oh my God, what was going on there? But it's half the fault of the investors.
Yeah. Sean said, let's do some chain stuff online on Thursday, man. Dude, it's your show on Thursday.
Yeah,
you do whatever you want. He said, of course he has his own venture fund. How would he own FTC? Yeah, of course. They have Binance Labs. They have a venture fund. Absolutely have a venture fund. I just don't think that they've what I said was they didn't own the sole market maker on their exchange, which was a big part of the problem. And the story that's now coming is this, is up until sometime this year, FTX did not, it was post Luna that FTX had to bail out Alameda. And that's when Sam transferred user funds out sometime after Luna, supposedly. This is the current storyline. And the reason they had to do that, it wasn't that Alameda had massive exposure to Luna themselves. It's that people that owed them money had massive exposure, or people they owed money to had massive exposure and debts got called due both ways. Mm-hmm. So, that's the most recent thing I've heard.
So
Shizzy, Sean says, Shizzy, Sean's hosting Thursday. Let's go.
All right.
You know, Shizzy seems a little too happy for that. What's up with that? Is he like, you know, he's like, yeah, Sean, just do it every day, dude.
But everybody loves to hear from Sean. So
absolutely. I'm kidding. Anyway. So we'll see, Sean. I can't wait to discuss it on Thursday. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I guess I think what
Sam's out trying to raise more money.
Quick question. Has anybody seen the liability side of the balance sheet for Binance? I mean, is that out there anywhere?
I don't know.
Okay, I was just curious. If anybody has seen that, I'd love to. I mean, I guess I could go to Uncle Google, but you know, if there's anyone floating around in some funding document from someone of the last couple of months, I'd love to see it. So, you know, you can just tweet, DM us, either Brad or myself, B05 Crypto or Pathfinder 305, because we'd love to talk about that.
Yeah, sure.
So what's he doing now? I'm raising more money.
He's out trying to raise more money. I just like, dude, Sean's what's hosting Thursday. Shizzy said, I'll get my winter jacket ready and my bear shoes.
I love it.
Wait, Sean said it's not public. They say it's coming soon. Wait.
Okay.
What was
the balance, the ledger, the liability side.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I'd like to see that, but
Bozo's out trying to raise more money. You know what? I'm so tired of talking about FTX. This is a really good thread. It's like step by step. It's like a timeline of the fall of Alameda and the change in their strategy. And it's fascinating that this guy tweeted it, the entire storyline of how they ended up long and out of what they were doing, which was market making and arbitrage. And it's just fascinating to kind of see it, how he tweeted about the details of their choices and decision. Of course, in the bull market, they were geniuses. And so they thought it would last forever.
Yeah. Up only. Everybody's a genius.
Oh, you sent me this one. Banking giants in New York Fed start 12-week digital dollar pilot. Oh, they're panicking.
I thought that was kind of interesting. I personally am not a fan of the digital dollar. I don't think it makes sense for us.
No, unless I'm definitely not, because it's invasive, privacy violating. Just too many nasty things that these people could do.
Yeah, unless there's a way. How much is that? What is it? $32 trillion in circulation, I think, or something like that right now, dollars. Unless it's a way where it's easier to spin out maybe like wrap dollars into other countries that way. Maybe there's an application there. For the most part,
USDC.
It's all USDC?
No, it should be called USDC.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What the fuck? Why do you have to go reinvent it?
I think we already.
Because they want to control it.
Yeah, and I think they're going to, but I have a feeling that the people that are going to go, wait, the ones who really lose on this are the banks themselves.
Yeah.
Because they don't want it all disclosed.
Yep.
Look, with the bank, it's a confidence entity in that you have to have confidence that if you show up there to withdraw your money, it's going to be there. If you don't have that confidence, you're not going to put your money there.
Put it on chain.
Yeah, so if you can do that, then it kind of takes a lot of the banking margins and stuff and makes it public, which they're probably not going to like vis-a-vis, in comparison to their competitors, where they're all going to know what to bid on, big financings. But, maybe the retail level, or maybe there's some way that it benefits, but it's certainly not a central bank coin. I just think that's foolish.
Chuck says digital dollar is just exactly the same motivation as the digital one. I totally agree.
Yep.
It's control. It's manipulation, control, privacy invasion, tax collection. It's everything.
It's behavior modification is what it is.
Yeah. So analyst from JP Morgan was speaking at an event yesterday or day before, and out and out said FTX, the problem is centralization, has nothing to do with true crypto, true decentralization, DeFi, etc. Which for fucking JP Morgan to be saying this shit, that gets me excited. Not that I care what JP Morgan thinks. The message is in.
Yeah, it's mission accomplished.
Yeah, exactly.
If these guys are saying the problem of centralization, then, the problem, everybody from the centralized tower is saying, the problem is centralization.
Yep.
Then it gives credence to all of their clients that, hey, man, I need to look for decentralized stuff next time.
Yep.
So JP Morgan, why don't you start teeing up decentralized opportunities for everyone? Start pointing out what those look like. I'd love to know what you guys think are the good ones.
Yeah.
Show you stuff every day, but I'm really curious what you guys think. And this is just fintechy stuff. So, we got the whole rest of crypto to deal with, decentralized science, identity type stuff. We got all these other applications that aren't finance. So I'd really love to see what the finance guys got to say. What are we doing wrong?
Yeah.
Tell us. Help us. Join us.
DaBank is releasing the pro version of in beta of their platform. Remember when they took away the bundled, you could have multiple wallets, and they said that was going to come out in the pro version, which really pissed me off.
Yeah.
They are releasing it. They started the release of it today. You still can't do half the shit you used to could be able to do. But the idea is you're going to pay for this. You're going to have to mint a $96 NFT to be a part of their network. And then you can pay them some fee. It'll be free during beta. And you'll get Time Machine on all addresses, enhanced bundles feature, so the idea of bundling multiple wallets together, a whale address list and their activity monitoring, so you can monitor whales, trades they're making, moves they're making, etc. Profound data analysts and insights for the on-chain token protocol NFT collection, which that's kind of, I think they're treading into the Nansen and Messari, especially Nansen, competing with them, which is interesting. You know, and if you look at a Nansen, their base package is like $80 a month and up to, I think, 40,000 a year, something like that. But I really loved the bank's product. It was more complete, better functioning, better UI than any of the other products like this, like Zerion or Zapper or whatever. What else? Time Machine is what's live today. Every Web3 idea holder. So you go pay $96 to mint. You can try out the new features as they roll out. I thought it was really interesting that the founder of DeFi Llama was like, cool, would you be interested in doing sub-payments through Llama Pay? We can build something custom for you. So he's trying to sell his Llama Pay product while in fact, DaBank and DeFi Llama have some crossover and competitiveness, but you know, it's cool. And it's a great way to promote what they're doing.
Yeah.
But what was really interesting is I went back and dove back in to what's going on over there. And they have this link to this product called Hi. And Hi is a Web3 native messaging tool. We've kind of talked about it before, but what I didn't realize when we talked about it before, when you go to their white paper, this is actually built on their own layer two. So they're building a messaging system that's built on their own layer two network. And then the way that it's going to work is they have a fairly interesting algorithm for the way messaging works. So if you're not connected to somebody and somebody wants us to reach you, they have to pay for the privilege, but the algorithm varies how much you're being paid based on how many people want to message you and how many messages you've received. So it's actually a pretty cool system that will allow people to pay to get in touch with somebody they don't have a connection to, or pay to get in touch with a wallet address. They may not even know who the person is, but they can pay to, like, they could pick out, you know, addresses, every address that has, you know, registered on OpenSea and has X number of NFT sales or X number of sushi transactions. And then you can message them. So it's a marketing thing, right? You can reach out about a project instead of sending them tokens that people are nervous about touching and pay to reach them. Anyway, they've got a, you know, offer price curve built into the system. It's very interesting to me. Here's my problem.
Can I ask a question before you tell us the problem? How does this relate to our buddies project? The one that we're talking about on Reddit, the messaging platform project.
Oh, it relates.
Okay. That's what I was.
Different implementation, but similar.
Yeah. So I think there's some good information here for our buddy.
Yeah.
To look at.
Yeah, for Niblets. Yeah. But here's the problem with this one. The problem with this one is, yeah, you may get the bank users to use it, but are you going to get all the whales that people want to communicate with to use it? Are you going to get, you know, enough wallet addresses using the messaging system and having it as part of their interactions with DeFi? Are you going to get enough of them to make it worth it? Because now you've got the cart and horse thing. Basically, you're creating a marketplace, right? You're creating a messaging protocol. You and I can message each other because our wallets are connected, right? So that's cool. But you and I can message each other on Telegram, Discord,
whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
How are you going to incentivize people to adopt this, right? Because I've got to mint an NFT to adopt it. And I've now got to have this other application or other system running for messaging. Now, if I use DaBank all day, man, makes sense. You know, I'll have messaging in the DaBank interface. But if I don't use DaBank and I want to reach out to people with a specific wallet, you know, configuration or use history, then if they don't have DaBank messaging, how are they going to get them signed up? Right. So they're going to have a cart and horse problem. It's a classic kind of marketplace problem, right? You know, how do you generate enough people that want it? And how do you make it so that people that have the addresses want to bother with it and be on the messaging platform? Now, you know, if you're making 10 grand every time somebody messages you, okay, you might sign up. Right. But if you're holding $100 million in your wallet and you're making $50 for every time somebody wants to message you, probably not going to go with it. So anyway, we'll see. Yeah. They may have a reason to solve it, but I don't know what it is yet. Doesn't say.
I like the idea, though. I mean, just like I like the idea in our in Niblets's concept. But I think you're right. It has to be where. I mean, how do you like if someone messages you and you're like if it's wallet to wallet messaging, is NFTs or how is the message being sent? I don't think a lot of people know how to like.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to happen in wallet, if it's going to happen in the DeBank application because you register. It's probably going to happen in the DeBank application because you register your wallet on DeBank, right? And then you can associate some identity if you want to with an NFT that you mint on DeBank. And then DeBank has all the data already. You know, they have every wallet's data. They just have to queue it for the person that wants to collect it. So I'm assuming that interface will happen in DeBank. They actually launched a mobile app as well recently.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
So you can message through that. Look, you know, so strategically, I think it's a smart move. How they adopt, get adoption. As Chuck says, it's Metcalfe's law. They have to give it away for a long time to get there. Network value is in squared of users. So yeah, they're going to have to give it away, but they're charging out of the bank for a lot of shit. So I don't know. I mean, I guess their investors wanted, I've had a couple of conversations with the CEO at DeBank trying to get him on the show and he's just reluctant to appear on any shows. But you know, I assume the investors in DeBank are saying, hey, revenue stream time. So, you know, they're charging for everything except the
business. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense.
You know, there's the this is currently what you can get. These are the pro features, whale tracking, bundles, token tracking, protocols, and NFTs. And then, like I said, we'll see what this high messaging app comes out like.
I mean, I guess the implication, you could load in, you know, the whale watching wallets that you want to watch.
Yeah.
And that's basically that's the alpha you basically want out of this platform.
Yeah.
One. So I'm kind of wondering, I mean, I see the messaging application, but I see it more from if you're a protocol owner or controller, let's say, and you have all these users or all these token owners, let's say, holding that NFT in their wallet or something like that, or tokens.
Right.
And you can do compliance messaging or, I mean, boring shit like that. Or you can do, you know, governance vote coming up stuff and message within the wallets. I mean, that's kind of where I think it really has to be. Like, I know that. I think Swift was doing something. I mean, some lame messaging thing on chain, not to wallets, but just to record that they'd put the compliance notice up in an immutable fashion. And that got all kinds of buzz. And what is it? It's nothing. It's like a fax thing or something like that, basically. In today's terms, it's the equivalent. So to me, any way they can master that in the messaging within the wallets, because it seems like, I mean, the feds have already, the regulators have already shown that's where they want to start serving people. So it's
right.
Like maybe this becomes, everybody becomes a node.
Yeah.
You know, and it's on your smartphone or something. I don't know, but it's definitely an interesting thing to take the communications platforms off of just messaging and then route them through instead a wallet, which is actually an identity, a digital identity in a way.
Right.
That is going to be interesting and something I haven't thought about much.
I stumbled upon another product. I don't know how new it is. I think it is fairly new. It's called Watchers.pro. This is, again, Sifu's wallet. Really has some cool functionality. Like you can see the wallet that you're looking at's activity over time in a chart. You can see the main contracts that they're interacting with. And if they are known, they'll be labeled. Which is really cool. So you can see what things they're looking at and go check it out, whatever. Shows their current portfolio in multiple pages. I don't know if this one you can expand. No. Tokens that they've sent in the last 7 days, tokens they've received in the last 7 days, and all of their most recent activity. So this is pretty cool. I don't see any alert functionality in this, but I do like the product. And then they also have NFT collection for the wallet you're watching. And then what they call entity analysis, which I'm not sure what that means. Oh, look at that. There are labels too. Entity, so he's got analysis. Labels on his.
Yeah, maybe you're looking at a fund or you're looking at, you know, like maybe like the Alameda stuff. Like you could load up all the wallets or something.
Yeah, maybe. You
and look at a protocol in all their wallets, perhaps.
I don't know, but I really, this is really interesting.
That looks cool.
Yeah, it's a really, you know, and again, you got all these kind of data plays that are merging and having crossover technology with each other. It's going to be real interesting to see where everybody comes out. But you know, go ahead.
I was going to say, for the users, I mean, I might be stating the obvious here, and apologies, I am probably stating the obvious to a lot of our listeners or watchers, but, you know, if you're tracking, say, the top 20 wallets or the people you respect, you know, like Brad's wallet or Tifu's wallet or Gainsey or any of those people, you know, when you see their holdings, what you're looking for is commonality across those portfolios.
Yep.
So if you see, like, everybody's buying Dogecoin, you know, that should tell you something. It doesn't mean they're all conspiring together. It just means that for some reason that they're all getting into that one. So, you know, you can mimic these behaviors, and maybe somebody telegraphs a move into another coin.
Yeah.
Maybe there's patterns created. Maybe these people cycle amongst different coins in different ways, but it allows you to kind of see, hopefully be able to divine where capital's flowing next. Because the whole key in investing is to get out in front of the money, so you're there first. And then when the money comes pouring through the toll booth that you just set up, that's when you take your profits.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what this is really good for, intelligence, you know, getting intel on what other people are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. We're running late here, and I don't think we have anything of consequence else that we haven't talked about.
Yeah,
oh, Pantera Capital put bought 4.9 million of liquidity, which is a good sign. Everybody's getting kind of hot and bothered about liquidity and their chicken bonds. Pace is picking up with them. Tech layoffs, Joe, you know, Meta, Amazon announced, we talked about, everybody's laying them off. A lot of good talent out there for Web3. We'll talk about this tomorrow. Do we want to do Twitter Spaces tomorrow?
Yeah, let's try it out. Why not? Yeah.
All right.
I mean, because I want to put to where we're just doing it on, you know, I mean, I want to say this, I'm not anointing it that this is the answer, but it really would be cool if we could get a little more engagement with, you know, our core audience. In ways where people can comment, I guess. But I also like the idea of being able to do it in, you know, one platform again, where everybody's watching there, maybe, versus YouTube.
Well,
or...
we can't do video there is the only problem. So, like I said, I tried to sync it up, but I couldn't. You know what? Let's talk after the show. I'm thinking maybe we'll do an evening thing one time for 30 minutes.
Just as a test run, just a totally different thing.
Yeah, like DeFi dinner, like Shizzy wants. Shizzy wants
DeFi
dinner.
Yeah, let's do that. That's great, because then it could just be a whole different feel.
Yeah, we can wrap up whatever we missed during the day. All right, so tomorrow will be normal YouTube channel, guys. All right. Well, let's wrap it up, Joe.
Yeah, look, I mean, my exit messaging is that I don't see as much doom and gloom out there. I mean, you know, when you think about these colossal F-ups over the last 6 months, you know, this is just like trimming the fat out. And so this is the way markets work. And this is the way we move forward. So on the macro side, the high level side, I see money being made over there. And I see, you know, I see that soft landing. I see positive stuff in China. I see positive stuff coming, you know, in the Ukraine, Russia stuff. So again, I feel like we're getting ready to blow the lid off. And that's all good for crypto. But I'm going to focus more on the purely decentralized stuff. I'm going to try to get closer to what Brad's doing rather than, you know, worrying about all my friends' seed phrases and shit like that. Because they got to figure that shit out. We all got hacked in the past. So we nutted up and kept going. They can do it too. So let's find the cool stuff that they're going to come and find in 12 months.
Yep.
And let's make sure we go in and, you know, change protocols, and let's go in and just dominate these. And then when they do come to the light, to the real deals, you know, we're all going to do okay. So that's where I'm going to be looking like for the future. So I'm feeling super positive.
Awesome. I'm glad you are. That's fantastic news. Thank you, everybody, for listening, watching, etc. Thank you. Oops, I closed my comments. Thank you, Shizzy, Sean, Chuck. That was it for today, right? Shizzy, Sean, and Chuck. A new crew today. Shizzy, Sean, and Chuck. It's hard to say. Say that three times fast.
Shizzy, Sean, Chuck. Shizzy, Sean, Chuck. Yeah, the shizzy to Sean part's a little tricky.
Thanks so much for participating. We appreciate you guys being involved, engaged, giving us your thoughts and feedback and humor. It's appreciated. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please just take a minute to rate, review us, and let your friends know about us. Same with Spotify. If you're on YouTube, please click the subscribe button. Click the little bell so you get notified when we put out new episodes or when we're live. And make sure you please smash that bell. The thumbs up on the episode you're watching now. So we boost our presence in the algorithm. Hope everyone has a lovely afternoon. We'll talk to you soon. Love you guys. Take care.
Yeah, thanks, everyone.